Blog Talk Radio.
Shit. The off-season version of a much less detailed podcast on a Friday night, May 9th, 2014. I'm Dre, he's Jay, and we have your NFL draft coverage 2014. The first round last night, the second and third round tonight, the third round just finishing up as we go on the air live. And Jason, it's been, as far as I'm concerned, everything the draft usually is and maybe even a little more.
Well, first of all, I just want to thank the good Lord Jesus Christ and praise be to God for giving me this opportunity, and I can't wait to contribute to, in much less detail, the podcast. This is a dream come true. I am so blessed right now. Oh, praise be to God. That's my draft recap right there. Because, fuck, it's what every single guy who went up on that stage said. Were they reading from a script?
It looks like it's
every single guy gets his hat, goes up there, hugs the commissioner, and almost says the exact same thing.
I would also like to say, as the administrator, that I'm very, very proud of my pick of Jason. He's exactly the guy that we wanted. He was number one on our draft board. We can't believe he fell to us. There's no way that we wanted anybody other than the person that we picked at this spot. It's the perfect pick for us. He's going to be a perfect fit for our organization. We can't wait to have him in tomorrow to camp and to start our journey together, and we're just so proud to have him as part of our organization.
Yeah. Then you can cut to either, well, if it was NFL Network like I was watching, you would cut to or hear Mike Mayock talking over the pick going, "This is one of my favorite players in the draft." And then blah, 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 upside. And that was over and over and over again. I was telling you right before we went on air, I had an engagement last night with my wife. So I taped the draft. I just dated myself. I DVR'd the draft. And I managed to avoid all the news. I didn't know a single thing. I got home about 10 o'clock p.m. Central Time, 3 hours after the draft started. Shocked when I turned on the TV to see that the draft was still going, so they clearly didn't squeeze it into their three-hour window that I'm sure they were hoping for. And watched it without knowing anything. Fortunately, I was able to skip through all the commercials, and I did NFL Network, and thank God I was able to skip through the commercials, because after about the 14th, 15th pick, it was tons of commercials, cut back to the guys, 2 minutes, 3 minutes of talking, "Oh, the pick's not in yet, let's jump back out to some more commercials." It was a commercial fest for the last 2.5 hours of what was going on that I had recorded. So I'm glad I was able to, I might do this every year for the draft now. I might start watching the draft every year at 9:30, because skipping out of the commercials, I'll probably finish at the same time as everybody else and not have to watch all the crap.
Yeah, that's probably the smart way to do it. I bet a lot of people watch it that way, because it is interminable. It really is. I was wondering, are teams allowed to have like a quick pick? Are they allowed to have a selection made within the first, 60 seconds of their allotted 10 minutes, or does that just fuck up the commercial schedule? Are they not allowed to make their pick? If somebody takes a guy at 8 and I got the 9th pick and it's the person I wanted is waiting there at 9, I don't need to wait the whole 10 minutes. I'm going to put my card in and so I can snatch my guy right now. I don't really need to wait. But nobody seemed to take the incentive to make their pick immediately. Everybody seemed to take you know, 8 minutes, the full 10, 9 minutes, the full 10. It was almost as if they planned it out. It was almost like it was a TV show we were watching or something.
It was definitely produced for television more than in the past, in a couple of good ways, at least on NFL Network, what I watched, but in the bad way, too, where it felt like it was dragging between the picks. I don't know what your perspective was on watching ESPN, but with the guys on the booth on NFL Network, you always had the wide shot so you could see the big clock behind them that had, you know, the big board in the place, and it showed who had picked and how much time was left. And every team was getting 10 minutes. Now, we remember growing up when the first round, you got 15 minutes, and it was 8 hours for the first round of the draft.
Thank the Lord it was only 10 minutes between.
But now it's 10. But what I was noticing was the commissioner was walking up, turning in, you know, announcing the picks, and on the board behind him, the team that was picking next would only have 4.5 or 5 minutes left. So I'm sure they were waiting to come back from commercial breaks and give all the talking heads their time to talk. It wasn't the 10 minutes was up, Goodell's up in front of the mic, next team's on the clock, 9.5 minutes to go. A lot of it was spilling over. On the positive side, though, somebody must have gotten to these guys, at least I don't know how it was on ESPN, but I was for the first time in probably 5 or 6 years, when the pick was announced was when you knew who got picked. Because the draft had been getting ruined by the whole let's show the guy talking on the phone and let's show the party at the guy's house before the pick even comes out. So somebody must have gotten in these guys' ears and said, please do not let everybody know what the pick is before the pick is actually announced. So
it was not only the cameras going to the kid that was about to get picked and he's already on the phone crying or what have you, but it was Chris Berman, the worst hack in all of sports broadcasting, and this is coming from me, so you know that's bad, ruining the picks by having a little inside joke that he would, you know, something based on a hit song by Huey Lewis in the News that ties into the name of the kid right before Goodell said the name. It was the whole thing was being ruined because nobody was able to keep their pants dry, and everybody was so quick to spoil the secret and spoil the surprise and let you know who the next pick was going to be. So, yeah, it was pretty obvious that everyone involved with the broadcast got a stern lecture and a good talking to by maybe Roger Goodell himself or one of his minions or something, that they are all on message now. You do not fuck up the suspense of our pick before Roger Goodell says the name. This is a television show. This is a production. We have a huge audience. The number was like a 6.1 rating or something crazy like that. We have millions and millions of people watching as if this is some soap opera, you know, some great reality show or something, and it's like American Idol. You're not going to have Jennifer Lopez or, you know, Simon Cowell going back to when he was on, spoiling the winner of American Idol and telling, you know, the results of the voting before the results are supposed to be made public or something. It's pretty simple. You know, it's not hard to figure out. You want to keep it secret. You want to keep it on the down low before the announcement. You don't want anyone to have any little spoilers or surprises or secrets to leak out there. There's enough of that on Twitter. There's great reporters like Jason LaConfora. Oh, man, what the hell is this guy's name?
You get it right.
Anyway,
you
know,
just kind of had
you
the
know
enunciation wrong. Jason LaConfora.
LaConfora. That's it.
LaConfora. You just had the enunciations all over the place, though. You're good.
Who gives you the picks before they're being made, 2 or 3 minutes before the announcement is made. And that's great reporting to me. That's not spoiling it or, you know, that's not – if you don't want to have him spoil your pick, don't follow Jason LaConfora on Twitter. But as far as the broadcast is concerned, that's clearly a television show. They've got their ducks in a row to make sure that nobody is spoiling those picks anymore.
Yeah, and it was nice to see. Now, we had a strategy to our draft watching. We each took one of the major networks. You gave me the right to choose first. So obviously I took NFL Network, which was your mistake, versus just saying, hey, I'm watching NFL Network. Do you want to watch ESPN so we get a different perspective? Nope, you let me choose. I will pledge right now. Next year we can switch. So I'm sure there's some good news for you. Next year I will. I'll take the ESPN. And you can have NFL Network next year. Any takes on the coverage of the draft that you watched on ESPN?
I was going to hash this out with you off the air, and then I wanted to make it maybe whoever wins the football season, the picks title, maybe that person can pick the theme music for the show for the whole next year or something like that. And this is all favor you since you won the picks and you won the college basketball bracket pool. And I was saying maybe whoever wins the bracket pool gets to choose which network that they can watch the NFL draft coverage, because that was a punishment to have to watch the ESPN coverage. I don't know why I let you have the choice, but I guess I was just being nice. But, it was terrible for my Charles Barkley out. It was terrible. Berman Schtick is so damn old. Every reference he makes has some 70s or 80s tinge to it. Maybe even 60s. We get it. You like old music. Okay, we got the message 20 years ago. We got it. All right, just move on. Just come up with some new material. The thing about the ESPN coverage, the worst part of it, was that you had four guys up there on stage. You got Berman, who has nothing of value to add, completely nothing. You have Don Gruden, who from Jump Street, from the moment the show went on the air at 8 o'clock Eastern time, had nothing come out of his mouth except Johnny Manziel. I love Johnny Manziel. I love Johnny Football. I think they should take Johnny Football here. I can't wait till they take Johnny Football. I can't believe they're passing over Johnny Football. Nothing on his mind but Johnny Football. Then you had Ray Lewis, and there's nothing on his mind except whatever defensive guy was available. Even the teams that clearly need quarterback help, like Cleveland, like Minnesota, Ray Lewis is talking about the top defensive player left on the board, and that's who they need to take because defense is all that matters. And he had nothing on his mind but defense, defense, defense. And on top of that, you could tell he never had experience doing a 3- and 4-hour live show like that, because by the time hour two was ending, it was about his Betty by time. He was starting to get, like, zoned out. Like, he was getting punch drunk. It was almost like watching Hawk Harrelson trying to broadcast a West Coast baseball game. You could tell that he was just about to go Betty by any moment now. You waited for him to just drop on the floor right there on camera. And the fourth guy on set is Mel Kiper Jr., who is by a mile the only person on that set who knows anything about any of the players being drafted. And not only does he know a little about them, he knows, like, everything about them. You gave him a name, and he was just ready on point to talk about this guy's mother, his underwear size, the kind of car he drives, his father's occupation. He had everything you could possibly know about every single draft pick that came up, and it was so clear that he knew way more than anybody else on that set. It was kind of sad, actually. You know, eventually my mind started drifting and wondering, what does Mel Kiper do with his time? Does his family ever see him? If he has this much time to get to know all of these players and everything about them, you know, when does he have time to sleep or hang out with his family or anything? So either he's a great teleprompter reader and they have all this information just ready for him and he's ready to just read and get all this info out there, or he actually knows all this stuff. I tend to think he actually knows all this stuff because this really is his life. This really is his career, but That was just the painful part about watching the ESPN broadcast. It was three idiots who knew nothing. You think they know something about football. One is a Super Bowl champion coach. One is a Super Bowl champion player. And one has been covering, if you want to say the word covering, NFL football for the last, you know, quarter century. You'd think they have a clue, but they didn't. And Mel Kiper was the only person up there who had a clue. And as happy as I was that there was one person that knew something about what was going on, it's still 1 out of 4, and that just makes for just a horrible, horrible broadcast.
Well, you know, an NFL Network had a similar four-man booth. You had Rich Eisen, who was the John Gruden of the group with his Johnny Manziel love. Every opportunity, even where picks made no sense for somebody to draft Johnny Manziel, that's all they could talk about. So it was very hard to be that first-round player to get your name in the spotlight because everything was about Johnny Manziel. When's he going to go? And they've been all the way until he was picked. It was pressure points. This is the next pressure point for Johnny Manziel. I was like, this is where he might go. I was getting so tired of the Johnny Manziel crap. So that was Rich Eisen's job. The Mike Mayock was the Mel Kiper of the group. And I like Mike Mayock doing commentary for games. And I know he knows a ton about the draft. He is their draft expert. But I don't know if he just didn't take his meds that day because he was just phenomenally cranky during the entire broadcast. Now, he's not like he seems like he'd be that kind of like curmudgeonly cranky guy. He's just like the expert in his field and everybody else is an idiot. But that doesn't work so well on primetime TV when you know you're the smartest guy in the room and everyone else is an idiot. Marshall Faulk was in the booth. He was trying to act like a draft expert, but he just wasn't. And to be honest with you, I've already forgotten who the fourth guy on that four-man team was. So, no joke, I already forgot who the extra guy was. It might come to me, but I've been sitting here, like, when you were doing your whole thing about the ESPN, and I'm trying to who was the fourth guy? Who was the fourth guy? If I can't remember, and I just watched it last night, must not have had much to add. And then, of course, they had Deion Sanders up on stage doing those wonderful interviews that I kind of lampooned a little bit at the beginning of the show, which means if you saw very similar interviews as well, those guys had to do it multiple times to just rattle off the same blah, 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 you know, can't wait to contribute, thank be to God. Yeah, it was a chore. It was a chore, and I like the draft. I like the draft because it's really our last taste of football until, you know, the preseason games. And nobody even cares about the preseason games, but those still draw better than some other sports regular season games. So this is our last taste of the NFL. So it is nice to get it in, kind of get the NFL out of our system for the next 4 months.
Yeah, it was about half the draft picks or, you know, somewhere around that number, about 16 of the 32 or so, Susie Culver pulled them aside after they walked off the stage after hugging Roger Goodell and making love to him on stage in front of millions of people live. She pulled about half of them aside and got their comments, and yes, that was about the gist of it. You know, thanks be to God, and I'm just so blessed, and I can't believe I'm here, and I can't wait to get with my team and this, that, and the other. They had to set a record for tears in this draft. I don't know if you remember this many people breaking down after they get drafted. It seemed like almost every draft pick was in tears, was in like shaking, sobbing tears after getting drafted. And the only theory I have for why that broke out this year as a phenomenon is because they put so much emphasis on this draft now by breaking it off into three nights, by making the first round a big primetime event. They put so much importance on this damn thing that it builds up that pressure and that all of the emotion gets built up, and there's so much time that it takes to get to your draft pick because they have to go to commercial, and then they got the pick in the hand of the commissioner, but he's got to wait till they get back, and everyone's just waiting on pins and needles, and that moment builds, and the embarrassment builds, and Johnny Football is sitting in the green room, and his sweat, you know, starts rolling down his brow, and everything just builds and builds and builds. And when you finally get picked, it's just like, oh, thank God it's over. You didn't have that feeling on Saturday morning at 11 o'clock, you know, when everyone's sitting down with their bowl of cereal, you know, watching Saturday morning cartoons, getting ready for the draft. It wasn't quite the same pressure building. There were some guys that cried then too, but this is just unbelievable. The way it just feels, so much more important. It just feels so much bigger now, and I don't know if that's necessarily for good or for bad.
Yeah, and it's surprising, too, because these guys who are there and crying, not having their parties at home, because those guys typically weren't crying. Those guys were happy. They were at a party. But these guys who were there, they know they're getting drafted. And they know they're getting drafted really high. The worst-case scenario for some of these guys, maybe you slip into the second round. But almost all these guys know they're going to be high draft picks. So maybe it's just the tears of joy. I don't know. Tough to try to, you know, psychoanalyze that one. But you are right. That was definitely very emotional, more than you would usually see.
So that third pick of the draft, it was, you know, it goes 1-2 with Jadeveon Clowney, the little bit of pressure buildup. Will the Texans take Jadeveon Clowney? Of course they're going to take him because they're not that stupid. And they take him, and the second pick is some big offensive lineman from Auburn that, you know, I never heard of because,
right,
you know, I don't follow college football very much, neither do you. So that third pick, when the Jaguars are up and everyone knows they need a quarterback because Blaine Gabbert is the drizzling shits, and, you know, more Johnny Football love starting to get built up on ESPN by Gruden, and Blake Bortles' name gets read. That was the moment, that buzz that went through the Radio City Music Hall when Blake Bortles' name gets read, and he gets up, and he almost has a look on his face like he's surprised, like, what? Me? What? Huh? That's why the draft gets that fucking number. That just crystallized in front of me like, okay, this is why we're all watching. This was the moment because that was the big sort of first surprise or the first swerve, and that's why we're all watching, is to watch the little twists and turns and forks in the road that gets taken. And that first that pick by Jacksonville to make Blake Bortles the first quarterback off the board after all the Johnny Football hype and everything else, that was pretty awesome to watch that moment.
Well, that was kind of a huh moment for me because I can't understand, unless Jacksonville had Blake Bortles rated as the best guy on their board and they had to have him, they could have gotten him later with the teams that were picking ahead of them. You know, and I just had a sense that would have been a spot to trade down. I don't understand. I mean, and we've seen teams here in the last few years jump up and grab quarterbacks a little early. Jake Locker, Christian Ponder, you know, a lot of these guys, these names, they jump out, and we see how it worked. And a lot of the times now it's these guys that just don't make sense. And that did not make any sense. But it's Jacksonville. That was the other thing that kind of went through my head. It's the Jags. What do you expect? Now, they did follow that up with receivers. So they are clearly, you know, they have a goal to solidify and improve that offense. The Jags are actually not a horrible defensive team. They fly under the radar because they're the Jags and they're so awful. But clearly what they were throwing out on the field was garbage, and I'm hoping they had this. I'm hoping when it got to three and they're like, ooh, Bortles is still on the board. Shocker. they had to jump on this guy. Sometimes you also fall into that. You got to be the smartest guy in the room thing, you know? So
yeah,
a team just wants to show how smart they are, and they're going to show everybody, and they're going to jump up there and they're going to get this guy. So, you know, the talk on NFL Network and what I was watching, and it was true, as you could see it happening, was that all the teams below the Jags now, everybody on their board just moved up a spot. You know, so there were players that some of these teams were at 4, 5, 6, 7, that was just like, oh, well, maybe we can get our guy now. Now, of course, it's the guy they wanted all along. We all know that.
Well, Buffalo saw the opportunity and trades up to get the 4 pick so that nobody can get their hands on the best receiver on the board, Sammy Watkins. Buffalo swoops right in and gets him. And that was a great trade, I think, because they clearly need some wide receiver help.
Yeah, I mean, they drafted E.J. Manuel. Stevie Johnson's been inconsistent. I know he was a little banged up last year, too, if I'm not mistaken. They have the running game. I mean, Buffalo's got that two-headed attack with Spiller and Fred Jackson. So that made sense to me. You know, go up there, get the big name, number one wide receiver, move everybody on that wide receiver depth chart down a notch, and give your quarterback some weapons, because Buffalo's one of those teams, again, plays good. Buffalo plays good defense, not a great defensive team, but in that division, you got to play the Patriots twice. You got to play the Dolphins twice. You got to play the Jets. So you got a chance of beating the Jets and the Dolphins, but if you're going to play New England, you got to outscore them, and you got to give your quarterback weapons to go out there and hang 30 or 35 on somebody to have a chance to win. But this is the NFL now, now that we're through the third round, like 14, 15 wide receivers already in this draft, mm-hmm. and a lot of defense. So you've got receivers and defensive players and not a lot else.
And the Bills, I definitely haven't kept up on all the football news today, but I did see that Stevie Johnson, whatever they thought of him, he gone. They dealt him to San Francisco, I believe. So.
Oh, okay. So I missed out on that one.
Yep. So next interesting pick to me was Cleveland moves up to 8. Here goes the Johnny Football Love again. Here we go. Everyone's mm-hmm. getting all lathered up. They know Cleveland needs a quarterback. Justin Gilbert, a cornerback from Oklahoma State, and immediately the Cleveland sucks chant start. That was just perfect to me. That was just it encapsulated Cleveland so well to me. Like, okay, we're gonna make the big move. We're gonna make the bold move. We're gonna get up. We have offensive problems. We've got so many issues scoring the football. We're gonna take another cornerback. Yeah.
Well, by the end of the night, though, you almost find, did Cleveland luck into their quarterback, or did Cleveland have a plan and it worked? I mean, clearly there were teams between 8 and 22 where Cleveland ended up drafting Manziel that just didn't really need quarterbacks. Everybody was salivating over this idea of the Cowboys taking Manziel. But Jerry Jones is not going to do that to Tony Romo. Tony Romo is his guy. For better or for worse,
yeah.
That's his guy. And they're not going to put him through the quarterback contract. If this was Chicago, I'd expect it. I'm surprised the Bears didn't draft Manziel just so we could listen to all the, Cutler, But, no, this is a quarter. This is Jimmy Jones. Jerry Jones loves Tony Romo. They're going to do whatever they can to prop him up almost stubbornly. They're not going to face him with, guy from Texas. No. It didn't work. Cleveland ends up scoring Manziel at 22. They don't have to pay him as much. Maybe they will, but they don't have to. And now they got a corner. They solidified their defense a little bit more, and they get their quarterback.
Yeah, I did not understand the Dallas connection either. That was just people speculating because Jerry Jones is a blithering idiot and he has no business being a general manager of a team. He barely has any business being an owner of a team. And everyone just assumed that because he's, Texas guy and Dallas Big D is all about Texas, that if he saw Johnny Manziel waiting there when his turn came, that he was just going to go ahead and take him and not give any thought to how smart of a move that is. But no, he apparently got talked down from doing that. He did have an interview out there today saying that Johnny Manziel was first on the board as far as he was concerned, but other people talked him into not making that move, and that was a smart thing to do,
in
my opinion, anyway.
Yeah.
We are about out of time on our live show. We've got so much more to cover about the NFL draft when we come back on the other side of our music. We have to talk about the actual Johnny Manziel draft pick. We have to talk about our teams, the Bears and the Packers and the Falcons and the Titans. What do we think of their picks? We'll see you on the other side. All right, into our 50-minute after-show portion of our program, more 2014 NFL draft coverage. And I want to get to the Johnny Manziel pick, the actual pick. First thing off the bat here is I have to say this. I'm sorry. I'm a black guy. This is the first thing that popped in my mind. When he gets drafted finally at 22 by the Cleveland Browns, and he walks up on stage, and you'd think there'd be a little humbling of Johnny Football after sitting there for hours, drinking water, sweating bullets, loosening his necktie, thinking about all the positions that he's falling, all the teams that are passing on him, all the hype around Johnny Football and everything that all these teams are not buying into, and he finally gets drafted. And what's the first thing this prick does when he gets up on stage is rub his fingers together and do the money-grabbing deal that he did when he got put into that game earlier in the college football season when he got suspended for a half for signing autographs and taking money. He gets on the field after that suspension. He throws some touchdown passes, and he starts rubbing his fingers together and doing a money dance and taunting the other team because he's an arrogant little prick. And what's the first thing he does when he gets drafted? He starts rubbing his fingers together and doing the money dance. He hasn't learned a damn thing about humility. If he were a black guy and that was his reaction to getting drafted at 22 was to get up on stage and rub his fingers together and do a money dance, we would still be hearing the repercussions from all the old dusty sports writers and journalists of this punk is a horrible role model for all the children and he doesn't know humility. He has no class. His family has no class. He's just this and that and just a horrible person, and he should be drawn and quartered.
I think it's okay, but I think it's okay he did it for one reason. He's going to be a bust, so let him have his moment. I don't foresee greatness in the future for Johnny Manziel. Oddly enough, it instantly on NFL Network anyways, when he got drafted, they were doing a lot of comparisons to who the player that just got drafted reminds you of a player who's in the league right now. You know, not like guy from, you know, a long time ago. But the current comparison they gave to Johnny Manziel was Russell Wilson, and instantly I was like, nope. No.
No.
No. Russell Wilson is he runs to throw, if that makes sense.
He's not trying to take off and make 50-yard runs all the time.
No, I mean, if he breaks containment and he's out on the edge and he doesn't see anybody downfield for 20 yards in front of him, he'll tuck it down and he'll bolt. But all the way up to the point when he gets to the line of scrimmage, he's looking to throw that thing, and he's looking to throw that thing deep, and he throws it deep with accuracy. He throws one of the best deep balls in the league. He gets that thing down there. He hits guys. He makes things happen with his legs. Johnny Manziel just scrambles around. I mean, it's funny because the one highlight that they always show of him, and I can't remember who they played, but I saw this play happen live, and I thought it was like the luckiest play I've ever seen. And even the TV guys were saying that he gets lucky sometimes.
I know which one you're going to talk about is the one he's going to leapfrog somebody like he's trying to jump a turnstile to get on a train, right?
He off the back foot, just heaves it down the middle of the field, like 40 yards down the field, and the receiver just flashes in from off screen in front of two defenders and catches the ball. That shit's not going to work in the NFL. First of all, he's asking me on the ground in the NFL before he even gets the chance to throw that thing. And NFL secondaries, for the most part, aren't going to just stand there and let the other guy just run up and catch the ball.
Yeah, I think that's a different play. I thought you were going to talk about this one play where he's about to get sacked. He's not 40 yards away. He's like close to the red zone. He's about to get sacked. There's all this trash around him, and he, like, jumped over a lineman who was lying on the ground in front of him and then had to backpedal and look for something. Like, dude, you're not going to go leapfrogging around and jumping over human beings and stay on your feet. That's just not going to happen in the NFL.
Yeah, so that's all well and good. He got his little moment. He got to show what a little cocky, arrogant prick he is. But I don't see greatness. We might see more out of old Bortles there in Jacksonville. Jacksonville could ever get their shit together. But no, I mean, you know who probably feels like they won the lottery would be Teddy Bridgewater, because what does he get? He just gets to turn around and stick it into Adrian Peterson's gut over and over and over and over. And that's going to be the quarterback's best friend. So if you want to be a guy coming out of the draft, that's like the dream come true for any quarterback. He's going to the dream situation where he has got the biggest security net in the league, where he gets to turn around, give it to a guy, go for 200 yards every week.
I could play that for Money Manziel running up on stage and rubbing his hands together like he's the Million Dollar Man. Seriously, what the hell are you doing? What the fuck, man? You know.
Yeah, that's a clown. I got to say, he's now trumped Jimmy Clausen as the biggest ass clown quarterback coming out that I've ever seen.
Yeah,
how well did that work for Jimmy Clausen too?
Not well. I believe he'd be out of football now.
Yeah, so
I don't think he's in the NFL anymore.
I'm sensing a similar career arc here for the great Johnny Football. but we got some time left here. We got to get some reactions about our teams. Anything for the Bear fan in you to be excited about?
I'm just excited that Phil Emery is not a retard, and he actually did see what was going on the field, and he saw how bad the Chicago Bears needed defensive reinforcement. His second and third round picks are defensive tackles, big boys to clog up the middle to stop the run. That's great. They'll rotate in and out with all the other D linemen that they picked up in free agency in the offseason. That's very smart. So this first round pick, and of course, again, I'm not a college football watcher. I know absolutely nothing about Kyle Fuller, the cornerback. All I saw was the 30 seconds that they played of his footage once he got drafted by the Bears. And judging off of what I saw on that footage, I think he's got a little Peanut Tillman in him. I can see a young Peanut. I can see a guy that's got the nose for the football, that's, you know, tough and is not going to let a receiver just go and get the football anywhere he wants. He's going to follow the receiver around. He's going to make plays on the ball. Just judging from that a little bit, I like the pick a lot. Peanut is getting on in his age. This is probably his last year as a Bear. I can see him going off into the sunset after this season. And I guess I kind of like the pick from that little bit of footage that I saw. That's all I could really judge by. And really, you know, anyone that watched all, you know, however many years he played in college, there's not much they can judge either, because it's a completely different game in the NFL. You can get a nice guess as to what he's going to be in the NFL, but no one really knows for sure. You know, Jacksonville thinks they know what Blake Bortles is going to be. Well, they thought they knew what Blaine Gabbert was going to be. So there's a lot of high picks that you don't really know until it actually goes down. But I definitely like the attitude of going with defense for the Bears. They clearly need help shoring up that defense. Their offense is not the problem, and I think it's just the only way you can really go. That's really the only method that Phil Emery can take. You can quibble over his guys as far as which defensive players were still on the board when he took who he took, but I'm not going to quibble. It's not like any of those defensive players taken after him were just like, oh, I remember that guy. He was awesome. No, I don't think you can really argue with the three guys that the Bears have taken so far.
Yeah, I had a similar reaction watching my Falcons draft. I think they made the safe pick at six with Matthews, the lineman of the Matthews lineage. I mean, that's a factory of NFL players being a Matthews now, and they took the kid, the offensive lineman. That Matt Ryan needed offensive line help. He spent – no one's going to question Matt Ryan's toughness after last year. Matt Ryan spent most of last season running for his life, and throwing from his back foot and getting sacked 7, 8, 9 times a game. So I'm sure he was really excited to see them go and get a nice big mauler for the offensive line, and then both the picks after that Atlanta made were defense, because you got to protect Matt Ryan. You don't need offensive weapons. You don't need, you know, what they would quote-unquote skill position guys. They have those. They have plenty of them. But that's a very weak defensive unit. So if they can, they could stop anybody, that's probably one of the better teams I've seen pick six, even though they lost as many games as they lost last year. They weren't getting destroyed in games. So, you know, and Mike Smith, as their coach, has had a very good record in tight games. So if they can just shore up that defense a little bit, they could very easily be back to a contending ball club with just with that offense. I mean, that's what everybody fell in love with last year, was that offense. So they take care of the defense, keep some points off the board for the other team. They got a good shot. Packers up here in Wisconsin, they picked the guy with the best name in the draft for sure, with the ha-ha Clinton Dix, which sounds like the punchline of a Monica Lewinsky joke somewhere there. Sorry. You know, it's all I could think of. That's the best I could come up with on short notice. They took a wide out because they lost James Jones. They took a tight end because JerMichael Finley's neck's trying to, you know, fall off. And another defensive player. So good up here. Ted Thompson up here in Green Bay has been a very smart draft guy. I mean, they don't sign the big name free agents. They don't spend a lot of money needlessly. They develop players. They bring them up, and then they'll jettison guys, especially receivers. And the Packers receiving, Aaron Rodgers is so good, but and so was Favre here, so it was the same thing. But when the receivers leave the Packers, they go all their places, and they don't do anything. So I have no faith that James Jones is going to go anywhere and do anything else. I have very similar feelings to like I have about Eric Decker leaving Denver and being this quote-unquote highly sought-after free agent. He's going to do absolutely nothing this year because he won't have – would he go to the Jets? Yeah. Yeah, you traded up.
Yeah.
Yeah, you went from Peyton Manning to Geno Smith. Good job. He should have walked into the news conference doing the Johnny Manziel money thing, because that's clearly why he left. So, good job.
Are you trying to say Aaron Rodgers and Peyton Manning kind of make – the receivers better? Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah, was I too subtle? that leaves you with the Titans here to round us out. Man on the scene.
The one thing I'll say about the Packers pick, by the way, of ha-ha Clinton Dix, is that there was a lot of Chicago talk from the shows from the talk shows I was listening to, that because the Bears' safeties are so putrid, a lot of people thought ha-ha was coming to the Bears, and now, of course, the Packers get him. All I can say is if Kyle Fuller somehow doesn't work out and ha-ha Clinton Dix is this awesome ball-hawking specialist for the Packers, uh-oh. Watch out, Phil Emery. That might be one you regret. But
or if Peppers comes up here and has 12 sacks this year, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Which won't
I
happen.
I have no opinion of the Titans taking left tackle Taylor Lewan with such a high pick. They picked him at number 11, and I really don't know why, because I don't think offensive line is their big problem. I think they need playmakers. They need running backs. They need a lot of help on offense, and I don't know if getting a big left tackle is really going to help them too much.
Yeah, the Titans are a team that lacks the skill position players.
Exactly.
All those receivers in this draft, and they take an offensive line.
Well, go figure. That wraps up our draft coverage for 2014. You can email the show in much less detail at gmail.com on any thoughts or opinions. Happy anniversary to you and your wife, Jason, coming up
thank you.
In a few days.
Next Wednesday, we will not be having a show that night.
And happy Mother's Day to all you mothers out there. We'll see you later.